The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
It's true. But the podcast for me is actually less about how many people are listening and the amazing women that I get to interview on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it should be about, right?
Yeah. And that is the people always ask, like, why women? Why do you want to work with women? I think we just have so much to share with each other and can lift each other up. And we also will, when I talk to women, what do you need help with at work? It's, well, this woman. And so I love bringing women on that are out there serving other women and trying to help them grow their businesses or coaching them,
right,
supporting them in some way. It's just amazing what women can do for each other. Like, we've built ourselves up so that we're no longer, you know, property and we can vote. Like, we've done all this cool stuff together. Yeah. And when we talk about inclusion and diversity in leadership and the workforce, women, if you walk into a boardroom, you might not find one.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, I'm Katie Eats. I am an educator, entrepreneur, advisor, and coach. I specialize in relationship strategy and helping people disrupt business as usual in their brain.
Katie, thanks for coming on the podcast. Welcome to The Accidental Entrepreneur. And I had the pleasure of being on one of your video podcast with Trevor. We were talking about, what was it? Bring your own brain
and talk about leadership.
Yeah, right. We were talking about leadership. Good. Okay. So I know that you are locked down and quarantined because you were out visiting people and you're in New Jersey like me, but maybe we can talk about not all just the stuff you're doing, but a little bit about your background and how you got into why you do the women leadership thing, you know, a little bit of guide us along the path, I guess.
Sure. So I started out as a high school history teacher on the north and south side of Chicago, where my favorite 6 years of teaching. And being a teacher is running your own business every day. And every classroom period is a different business in a sense.
Right.
And
you said high school?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's, the kids are different than in elementary school. Got to deal with
yes.
them.
Like, yeah.
And you can throw them out if they're bad. That's always good.
So, you know, I loved to ask them to step outside so we could have a conversation, because that was a little mini negotiation. And that was my favorite, because we were going to walk back in that classroom. Both of us were going to feel like we won. And in business, that's the best feeling, when both parties walk away and feel heard and seen and also get what they want.
Right.
So I loved teaching.
But at the end of the day, though, you're the teacher. You're going to win that negotiation regardless of what happens.
Well, that's the part that
they just don't know that.
That's the fun part in going into a negotiation. But also, right. If I have to throw them over to the principal, then that means I couldn't successfully negotiate that.
Right. Then you're going to have problems next time.
Yes. And on the south side of Chicago, you lose your job if you do that enough. And so I actually was the lead teacher.
Really? Even they didn't have tenure or something like that?
Well, I never worked in a union. So I was in charter and private.
Oh, charter schools. Right. Sure. Different.
Yeah. So we didn't have any protections. I was also new.
You had to do a good job and keep your job. Can you believe that? Like, I've never heard of stuff like that. You actually have to do your job in order to keep your job.
Yeah. And you know, it turns out they want you to keep kids in the classroom and learning as well. And so I actually, the kids that were kicked out of the other classrooms, we were all in a cohort of junior teachers, would come to me. And that was my favorite part as well, is helping win that hostage negotiation and that business deal for the teacher that wasn't able to.
Right.
And at the end of the day, it all came down for the kids on what is it that they really want. And they want to be in the classroom. They want to actually learn something.
Move
surprise.
Ahead in their life. Yeah.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it. I bring on all the kids. Yes, I guess technically I win. I did. I mean, when kids got kicked out, I was like, listen, I got a paycheck. You went home for 14 days and I had a vacation because you were suspended. So I 100% won there, but there's a different way we can win when you
come back. Yeah, because that doesn't really help the kids. I remember I had a high school, the high school, junior high, but definitely a history teacher. And she was tenured, right? Because a public school, she was a crazy person. So if you like got in trouble, you did something in class, she would say, Mitch, can you come out in the hall with me? Like you would do, and proceed to scream at the top of her lungs at you. And everybody in the building would hear it because she'd be out in the hallway. You don't ever do. And you know, it was just, and nobody else did that. She was the only teacher that would do that, but everybody knew. I forget what her name was. And I probably don't want to say it on the air anyway. She probably passed away. This is 40 years ago, but crazy. But that's what tenure does to people. It makes them crazy.
So I don't disagree with that. And I had some really crappy history teachers that were all football coaches. I don't know how they got this degree, by the way. It's not an easy degree to get in history. You have to write. But I knew I did not want to be that teacher. And so when I found myself my last year, my third school was all white kids in wealthy rural area. I left Chicago. I didn't want to be that teacher. And I also had put on 60 pounds as a teacher and walked into my first CrossFit gym and changed my relationship with food and really disrupted my brain, business as usual in my brain, and had some intense conversations. Like I would be at a party and think about those cupcakes the entire time I was there and how I wasn't going to have one.
Right.
And I would celebrate those victories of not having them, but man, that was a battle to be won.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But you need to focus on it. You know, there's a lot of people I know that have weight troubles. And it's really a challenge. You got to, like you said, you changed your relationship with food. You can't just diet. Diet's yo-yo stuff. You always relax, you know?
And I think how you change a bad relationship is you get rid of the things that you don't have a healthy relationship with. And so some people say moderation, but I've dated a guy in moderation before who was pretty toxic. Like I saw him and then I didn't. And then I saw him and then I didn't.
Real bad stuff.
For me,
unhealthy.
Yeah. Getting rid of, and then I found out some of the health problems I had were tied to some of the foods I was eating.
Yeah.
So it made it much easier to stay away from dairy when you realize, oh, this is causing some IBS and acne.
I got the same kind of issue. I think most of the chronic health problems we have are at least significantly affected by our diet and the processed
food. Food is thy medicine. Absolutely.
The crap sugar we have and everything, you know.
So I eliminated all of that stuff, but I did it slowly over time. And when I did one thing, I lost weight and I changed. And when I did another thing, and it made it addictive to the point where I was excited about what else can I eliminate? And so at the same time, I had in my CrossFit journey for me was about wanting to help other people. The same passion I had for wanting to teach kids, because I had these terrible teachers in high school, drove me to sit in a park for 4 months with a waiver that didn't probably mean anything because I didn't have an LLC or insurance. Nice. But I had 100 people come through this park and try CrossFit for the first time in this town in 2010 when 2012.
Just getting started.
Yeah, when people didn't know what CrossFit was in the middle of America.
So you were just like in the middle of a park and you're like, listen, I'm going to show you what CrossFit is and just sign this just in case I kill you in the process.
Well, actually, I said, hi, I'm Katie. I'm opening a CrossFit gym in town and we're starting here in this park. Here's the waiver. I'm a trainer. Here's my story. So it was a little, the waiver helped make it a little more official. And also I got your contact info. So I had my mail list.
Now, were you opening a gym or this was really the first step?
I was absolutely opening a gym. It was the first fight I had with my husband that I just married, months before that, where, I'm like, you have to invest, so I got $300 in kettlebells and I sat in the park and I found a staff. I found a, business partner. So we went in, we had two business partners, which is a terrible idea. We didn't need them to fund this, but we did it anyway. And we found a space and opened a gym in 4 months. And
it's a good entrepreneurial story.
Yeah. You create the business that you want and this didn't exist there. And I just had this huge transformation. And by the time we opened the gym, there was a 16-year-old girl who had joined and she lost her own 60 pounds and was headed into her senior year, a homeschool kid. She had friends outside of just the homeschool friends that she had. She built a community of people that were cheering her on.
Nice.
It was just beautiful to watch. And it was the classroom experience I had when I was teaching in Chicago. Just with adults this time. So we opened and in the first month we had all of our bills paid. We opened with 32 members and we needed 30 to be in the black. So if you have a dream and you really are able to bring people along with you that believe in it, we knew we needed a bigger space to grow, but we also didn't really have the money to do so.
Right.
And that's when you find out, who's really an entrepreneur, like who's ready to take the leap and say, we're going to do this. And so my third business partner left. And to be fair, the business plan was in my head and not on paper, but I shared it and it was a good one. It worked. So we moved to this 10,000 square foot facility that we couldn't afford. They took it down to the foundation. The man that owned it and his son was an architect in Chicago. And so it was a project for him in front of his building. He was an engineer and owned it. A lighting company. And so for a year, we got to watch them build this place, knowing we need to grow our membership. What are we going to do to afford this? And relationship building is so important in business. And I had approached three members who had been with us through the really, really cold winter. We didn't have heat that went above 65 degrees because it was an old bread.
Yeah, but you're going to run around, so it's okay.
Right. we only had a toilet that was, no showers. It was cold. It was a garage. But they stuck with us. And so I approached them and asked them if they wanted to be a lifetime member and invest in the gym with their membership dues up front.
Okay.
And my business partner had been gone for 16 months becoming a famous athlete. And so I'd always made a joke about Congress and how Congress should be like NASCAR and they should have to wear suits with all of their sponsors.
That's a great idea. That would offset the national debt.
Yeah.
We can auction off their sponsorships.
All the sponsors have to go towards some of the tech. I would love, I love this idea. And so we did that for our gym. So we needed a rig in CrossFit is what they call it. And we had a 90-foot one and, Henry Ford, if you want a car, you can have it in black.
Right. Well,
everyone only did this in black. So we said, let's give these people their own colors so that when Sam Dancer is lifting his 450-pound back squat, you've got a bright orange Killcliff logo in the background. And so we sponsored out all of our equipment. We got this. And then we worked with someone who just wanted to be a part of this project to get a great deal and brought in some, the Special Olympics, which was where I got my next itch for nonprofit. We brought in the Special Olympics and rented some office space to them as well as our chiropractor. And we had some physical therapy running out of there as well. And so the gym was beyond, I think when you, CrossFit. So when people think about, particularly in coaching industry, niching their business or who do you want? We found our niche and then we expanded because you need additional revenue streams.
Right.
Particularly living in rural America where there's only so many 30-year-olds or 20-year-olds that can afford your gym and want to work out there.
Sure. Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, that's a good message and a good lesson for people. There are ways to figure it out. You said, okay, well, we got to bring in more revenue. How are we going to do that? We're not going to, maybe you couldn't borrow or whatever. You didn't want to borrow. So you said, listen, we can help other people and make money to support the gym at the same time. That's brilliant. And I'm sure there's a lot of different business models that could do something like that if they just thought outside the box a little bit.
So I call it kind of the B Corp model. And the B Corp, right? You know, your Tom Shoes model of your, I didn't know what that was when I had the business at the time. So we were running fundraisers almost every other month because people would come in and say, hey, I know someone that has cystic fibrosis or my cousins, we'd like to raise money for them. They need surgery. So great. We'll do CF for CF and we'll have a fundraiser.
Good PR for you guys.
We
We
printed t-shirts. We sold them. We donated all the money. We ate the t-shirts on our end. And it was a great way to build community and to just bring more people. We had our strength and mobility. So our 60 and 70 year olds were in there. We had adaptive athletes, people that had one leg or were in a wheelchair and paralyzed, and working with people to rehab, because after physical therapy, you know, you still have to get stronger. And that's where I also really got into understanding the neuroscience behind mechanics and how our bodies work. We had a woman who had never sat up before since her car accident. Like, she had not, in 15 plus years since she sat up on her own. She was paralyzed from the waist down, and coming in, strengthening those muscles and also rewiring those connections between those muscles to sit up. She was able to sit up on her own.
Wow. And, that's great.
So there's some amazing things that can happen when your passion also is about not just creating the business that you want, but also really reflecting your values. And we didn't shy away from being a faith-based business. And that was a really important value to us, was to service people and to really provide what they needed and to help people. And the Special Olympics, I will always have a special place in my heart now for the Special Olympics and working with them. We had a fundraiser. The year I sold the gym, I missed the very first fundraiser. I was getting divorced. So that July, we launched a Row Raiser. It's an international fundraiser now for the Special Olympics. And it raises a ton of money every year. But I remember talking about it, like, what can everyone do? Everybody can sit on a rower and row.
Right.
And so they do a marathon on the rower, and you get a team, and it's just a really cool event. And there's a couple kids in this small town who have traveled the world, and they have Down syndrome, and they travel the world and they share their story. And it's just incredible. And that turned me into my third career when I landed here in Hoboken, New Jersey, in nonprofit. And I was
in Hoboken.
Yay, Hoboken. I was headed to New York, but I couldn't afford the toll. So Hoboken got to keep me.
That's funny. I lived in Hoboken when I was in law school for 3 years, 4 years. Yeah.
Hoboken. That's usually when people live there. I landed in Hoboken and realized I was already on the other end of the curve. The average age, I think, is 30.
it's a fairly young town. When I was there, all this building and renovation and it hadn't happened. The waterfront was like parking lots and dumps. There was nothing there. You know, I lived in a building, I think, that's not there anymore. They ripped it down, put up a new one, but I lived in the shit building before. But Hoboken was fun. I mean, it's a great town. It's a great
town. It was.
Place. Yeah. It was. Yeah. You know, are you still in Hoboken?
No, I didn't stay there long. I moved to the Heights. So I worked in Hoboken. But living there, I like a little more culture. A neighborhood that's more vibrant. Jersey City is the most diverse city in the nation. We beat Queens. And so the food's better and the people are friendlier. And
there's a whole revolution going on in Jersey City. Yeah.
Yeah. There's less moms pushing strollers and complaining in the.
That's funny.
Now in Hoboken.
Yeah. Well, Hoboken's very compact, you know, and now they got this whole thing where there's a spike in problems and they're talking about shutting bars down at, you know, there's all these places where people are gathering. But I think your story, though, your entrepreneur story is a good story, because this is the accidental entrepreneur and you're more of a purposeful entrepreneur where you know, whether you said you put it on paper or not, I'm sure some of it was on paper, but you know, you were purposeful about what you did, how to deal with the revenue issue and bring that in and then raise this and what more can we do for the community and keep getting people in our door. And, you know, you got to do that consciously. It doesn't just happen by opening your doors and hanging a shingle and saying, we're a CrossFit place. Come to us. You got to grab them by the back of their neck and drag them into your place. I mean, that's the way it works.
Yeah. You know, and it was purposeful in that when I wasn't sitting in the park, I didn't have a job. So I was, I left teaching early because my father-in-law had passed away. And so I would sit in Panera Bread of all places and watch videos on CrossFit gym owners, like 3-2-1 Go Project had so many free resources out at the time. And Again Faster, these places that had been, CrossFit's been around since the 90s. It just took a while. And I also was a part of the second CrossFit gym in Chicago to ever open. So I saw how they built a business. And I did have an Excel, it was a real basic Excel sheet, but you put in how many, you put in what your membership dues are, you put in your, what your rent costs and your utilities and your staff. And then you put in, how many members you have and you can, and you do that for January, February, right? You can see how many members that you need to break even. And so when you really look at the numbers, so then I go back to my ex-husband who literally I remember was saying, like, if you don't support me in this, like, we need to get divorced. And I think that's the only reason he supported me. We just got married. He was scared. He's like, if this doesn't work, it'll bankrupt us. And like,
right.
So, well, here's the numbers. We need 30 friends with $125 a month that want to work out in the best facility in town with the most knowledgeable coaches in town. Like, we're these people I met in the park. One was ex-Army, and that's where he found CrossFit. And he also had some additional certifications in kettlebell work. And another person that was there was a volleyball player at the college who also, which I played tennis at that same college. And she was a CrossFit. She had done CrossFit in her volleyball and wanted to coach. And she was a physiology major, whatever they get when they're going to be personal trainers. And so you just meet, you bring all these people together and it's intentional. So when we said, when we press go on this, you know, our rent was $1,000.
Yeah. Well, so, 30 by 1220 is $3,600. So that's, you know, that's not a big margin.
Yeah. Right. And that was the beauty of the CrossFit gym model as well, is I didn't have rowers when I first opened.
Right.
Right. You don't have to have everything, but the people there have to be the best that you've ever met. And if you've ever met personal trainers and you've ever done any work in the gym, that's what brings you there. That's what keeps businesses alive during a pandemic, is those relationships, the knowledge that you bring and your ability to share it and make people feel comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. So after, did you shut down the gym at some point after your divorce or?
No. So I sold it to my business partner. It's still there. So part of my business plan originally, we were Q-Town Fitness, doing business as Q-Town CrossFit.
Okay.
They pulled out of CrossFit actually before Greg Glassman had his tweet. And if you follow what's going on in CrossFit, there's a bunch of people that have left. They don't, there's a lot of, he was an affiliate model. So there's no quality control. And it's interesting. I think what really lives in your leadership with CrossFit is judgment, right? You walk into CrossFit's judging themselves as the elite. We're forging elite fitness. We have fittest people. Right. We have the best coaches.
Tough mutters, whatever they call them.
You get a little bit of judgment there. And so a lot of times business owners are so busy judging other business owners or what other things are happening around them. Like when we had a CrossFit gym open after we were open for a year, you know, my ex-husband and another business partner were always like, oh, look what they're doing. Like they were always keeping an eye on what was happening over there. But that doesn't matter. We know that if there's multiple bars in town, like on a same corner, that they will have more business versus if there was just one bar. Like,
right.
Spreading the word.
Because people want to go to a place where there's more bars.
Yeah. Right. And so now there's more opportunity. This is a big town. So if you live on one side of the town, right? If you live on one side of the town, you're going to go to that CrossFit gym. If you go to this side of the town, we actually ended up being on the same side of town when we moved. But you're also talking about, I can only have 500 people in this gym. When I did my market research as well, like,
you mean at one time?
No.
That was like the whole membership. So you
like, that's like your whole, like, you
knowing
like
how many people come and go, that's like the max number, right?
So I needed less than 2% of the population of this town to join my gym.
Okay.
Like, right.
That seems doable, right?
Exactly. And there can be two of you. So that was never a concern for me. So I had the foresight to also think about when we don't need to pay our $3,000 affiliate fee anymore. Like, what do we want our business to be called? So they're now called Q-Town Fitness, and they've moved to another location. And but the business model was turnkey ready. So the downside of getting divorced is having a business partner that also has foresight and says, ooh, let's do a hostile takeover and get this real cheap.
Oh, really? And, yeah, well, people take advantage of situations.
It happens. And so outside of me running payroll and then having to show someone how to do payroll, I mean, the place was turnkey ready. And that's also just a sign of you're an entrepreneur then, is you're not working in your business, you're working on your business.
Obviously,
and and so in 2015, we were already looking at putting together an online program. So when the pandemic hit, which I don't know what they're doing these now, but that would have been in my business model for years. And I would have been fine closing my doors. I would have just been able to roll my members into that online programming that already existed. So that's the additional revenue streams, I think, is also where people, like, that's when you realize, okay, I'm an entrepreneur now. I have multiple revenue streams and my business is kind of bulletproof in that sense.
Right. Okay. So then, but what made, are you from this area? Is that what brought you back here or?
No. So get divorced, moved back in with my parents because I was.
Which was in Chicago.
Outside of Chicago, a couple hours. And I'm like, do I go back to the city? Turns out all my girlfriends, you know, they didn't want to go out to the same bars and do the same things. Like, I hadn't been single since I was in college.
Right.
I'm in my 30s now. And New York honestly just had better opportunity. Going to New York and going on a job interview and saying, I got divorced, I owned a business. Everybody's an entrepreneur in the city.
Right.
Of course. And that's not as in... There was a lot of shame getting divorced, and the Midwest is a hard place to be a divorcee and not something I ever thought I would be. So didn't have kids. I gave him the dog.
Okay.
So picked up, you know, drove across the country for the 4 month sublet to look for what's my next career. And
just kind of starting over a little bit.
Yeah. Like, do I want to stay in a gym? Like, do I, you know, lots of people, when I moved out here, I met two CrossFit people that wanted to start a gym together, but I'm like, I already did that.
Yeah,
I don't want to do that again. I loved teaching kids. Like, I coached CrossFit kids out here for a while, which was fun. And the nonprofit made sense to me. I loved putting on the events to raise money. It was a mentoring program that I found at Hoboken, and it was with kids again. So I had it was younger kids. I definitely really enjoy the high school kids a little bit more, but it was a lot of fun. And I had 150 volunteers, and I wasn't a great boss when I owned the gym. Like, that was an area of my entrepreneurship. I was just such a natural teacher.
Right.
And I struggled to kind of make that transition into being a leader that is also a boss and disciplining employees. That sounds weird to say discipline, but, like, I think that's kind of what happened is instead of understanding, like, how you motivate employees and how you lead employees.
Right.
It was different from students. And so this time around, leading 150 volunteers on a marketing team, business team. They're also the mentors. That was a great experience for me. And it really allowed me to honor my values of relationships and really, I can't tell you how many times I thanked people because they weren't getting paid and how many handwritten thank yous I wrote. And that goes a long way when you're paying people too.
Right. So this was a nonprofit company you started, or you were running events for somebody?
I was their first paid executive director. So it was very grassroots. And I did have a part-time employee when I started, and she was a mom. And so she just had given birth when she went part-time. Like, so, you know, you're working a nonprofit. I see what you make. This is not going to make or break your bills.
Exactly.
So I ended up doing the program directing and I had an assistant that helped. And then the rest were volunteers. And I did that for 3 years.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
And then I transitioned. I wanted to look at a bigger budget. I also wanted to get back into schools.
Okay.
And so I became the director of development at a school in Hoboken and was ready to raise my first $1 million since they've been around for 40 years.
A private school or a charter school?
Private school, yeah.
Private school, okay.
Yeah. And was pretty excited. I had a lot of success and COVID hit. And well, before COVID hit, so I woke up in January and said, I'm going to start a business again.
Okay.
Right. In between.
Not knowing what's going on in Wuhan, China.
Not knowing. Right. And when I left my last year owning the gym, I hired a life coach. And she actually was getting certified and she was the Special Olympics director. And so it was part like doing her a favor, but also I had some goals. I think as business owners, we need to have coaches sometimes to help us look at our whole lives because
Definitely.
We're so pigeonholed into our actual life and what we're doing in the moment. So I wanted to realign my life to really focus on God and family and health and then work. Because I didn't have to coach these classes at 5 a.m. anymore. And I didn't we had arrived, we had gotten there. And the life coaching for me was life changing because it was, we never talked about my marriage, but I did all the things in my life and there was still that this isn't the right fit for me. And so I knew I wanted to be a coach again. I was coaching weight loss and transformational coaching for people and helping people build those new neural pathways to say, this food is not important to me anymore, but I needed to do my own work. Like when you get divorced, you got to take some time for yourself.
You definitely do.
You got to grieve the loss of a whole family. I mean, over 12 years, he also had a kidney transplant, went through chemo together. Oof. So there was a lot of grief. And so I did some therapy and that, so January I decided, you know, and then my mom died.
This past January?
No, she died. It'll be 2 years in June.
Okay. Sorry to hear that.
So, So I spent time in therapy again. So January, I wake up, I'm like, all right, I helped dad come out of the closet. He's also a gay man.
So
I spent all this time, got dad a therapist.
Okay.
But still had that bug. And I realized in January, like I love working for myself. I love building relationships and helping others and coaching, teaching, educating people. Like that's where I enjoy my time the most, where I feel the most fulfilled because it's really me sharing the gift I have.
Okay.
And, so I have been doing all this education during COVID. So COVID hits and I was still working, but now I'm not. And, what a great gift to take every single coaching certification I could get my hands on that sounded interesting.
Right.
And also still building my business. So launched a podcast, right before COVID. So I had that happening, which was great. People listened. And then it's funny as we started to not be under lockdown as much, people stopped listening. I don't know if you've
seen a lot of competition for ears and eyes and everybody's putting out content and people during COVID are like, oh yeah, I've been meaning to do that podcast or video talk roundtable or whatever. I mean, I got like 3 or 4 of them going on now. So yeah, there's just a lot of noise out there. I think we came into Corona with 750,000 podcasts and now it's over 1 million.
Wow. I didn't realize that stat.
Yeah. So, you know. I don't think it's that less people are listening to you. I think it's that they have more choices and everybody and their grandmother has a podcast and they're like, listen to me. So they're like, okay, listen to that. And then so you just got to kind of get their attention.
Yeah.
You know, in the conveyor belt of life, I guess. I don't know, you know.
It's true. But I, the, you know, the podcast for me is actually less about how many people are listening and the amazing women that I get to interview on the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it should be about, right?
Yeah. And that is the people always ask, like, why women? Why do you want to work with women? I think we just have so much to share with each other and can lift each other up. And we also will, when I talk to women, where, what do you need help with at work? It's, well, this woman. And so I love bringing women on that are able, are out there serving other women and trying to help them grow their businesses or trying to, or coaching them,
right,
supporting them in some way. It's just amazing what women can do for each other. Like, we've built ourselves up so that we're no longer, you know, property and we can vote. Like, we've done all this cool stuff together. Yeah. And when we talk about inclusion and diversity in the, in leadership and the workforce, women, if you walk into a boardroom, you're not, you might not find one.
Right. You should have more. I mean, if we had a woman president, we probably wouldn't have all these problems. We wouldn't have lost 200,000 people and people wouldn't want to kill each other. I just don't think the world would be as divisive of a place if you had somebody who was more caring. Now, I'm not saying a man can't be caring. I'm just saying that women are better at it in a lot of cases.
Well, women actually have larger
prefrontal
cortexes.
That does not surprise me in the least. When I get home and my wife said, "Oh, who'd you see today?" "Oh, I saw, you know, my friend Mario or whatever." "What'd you talk about?" "I don't know, nothing. I don't know. We just talked." "Well, boy, you must talk about something." "I don't remember." I mean, we don't, like, guys just don't do that. We just, you know, we think about nothing. There's a whole video called The Nothing Box, and it's how men think about nothing. Women want to know everything that's going on because I guess that's the answer. You have a bigger frontal cortex. It makes a lot of sense.
If we use it, but oftentimes, you know, women, okay, our brains are rewarded in the workforce for thinking like men. And so what I love to do is, for disrupting business as usual, is for men. You guys can disrupt your own brains. You can think a little bit more like us if you like.
I think that would be a healthy exercise.
Yeah. And it's also,
but it's a little overwhelming. You got to understand, for when a man tries to think like a woman, he doesn't know what to do with that. Like, I don't know what to do with that many thoughts and emotions, and it's too much for me. I can't.
Yeah, you need some help. And I'll tell you, nothing made me realize this more was taking care of my nephews this past week.
And how old are they?
They're under four and under.
Little kids, little boys.
Yes. Okay. The four-year-old will turn five on Thanksgiving, and right, watching dad interact. So what you can't be with runs your life. He agreed with me. If you can't be with emotions and what you see when these teeny humans have their teeny tantrums and have these really, like, emotions, is that dad wants those emotions to stop.
Right.
Right. And when I hang out with them at the park and they have these teeny emotions, if you watch them, within 2 minutes, they're going to, like, they've self-soothed, they've gotten it out,
right,
their anger's over,
and they
move on. And so, right, if you can be with those emotions for a couple minutes, everything goes back to being good. And also, that child has taught themselves how to be with an emotion so that they don't have to suppress it later. So that's why it's hard. Little girls, we let them cry a little bit longer sometimes. These are all boys.
Boys got to toughen it up and, you know, come on. It's not that, and women are emotional, and that's probably a healthier way to live. So, you know, men move on. We don't have, obviously because of the size of our brains, but we don't have memories of long time. My wife could tell you things that happened 15 years ago, like it's happening now to her. And I can't remember past last Tuesday. I make a lot of lists, you know, it's just I just don't carry it with me. Maybe I should, maybe I can't, I don't know.
When we think about thinking like women, I think oftentimes we're talking about using our right brains a little more.
Yeah, right. No question about it.
And so there's a way that you can pull yourself into your right brain, you know, writing poetry, sit down and write a poem. You're going to work that side of your brain. Comedies, where I prefer to spend some of that time, and writing jokes, like, that will also tap into that creative side
of
your brain.
Open mic night, right?
What's that?
Open mic night.
Open mic night. Yeah. And when I coach clients, women actually will struggle with this as well. And these are the clients I tend to find. And those women tend to be depressed, have anxiety.
Yeah.
and don't feel they've desensitized because those emotions were so strong and they were hurting them. So they've desensitized themselves to them.
Right. Yeah. It's funny how that works.
It's interesting when you try to pull them into the right brain and to shut off the logic side for a minute, and how it will either push you into a panic attack, or for this particular client now that we've worked for a while, she'll say, I feel my brain wanting to go to this place of panic. And then she shifts herself and she's like, but I'm okay.
Right.
And we sit with that moment and then we get to pull into a metaphor and like amazing things happen. And we're able to really kind of play with emotions in a way that we weren't able to before. Right.
Well, because she realizes she can make conscious decisions. And you said, listen, you don't have to be the passenger in the car. You can drive sometimes. It's not, not frightening. And I think that, you know, 90% of the stuff I deal with and I interview people all over the world and they're all kinds of different backgrounds. 90% of it is self-awareness and conscious thought. Like a lot of times we just don't know that we're stressed out because that's affecting us, or how we're talking to our spouse, or what we're doing in the classroom, and how it's affecting other people. And when you point that out to somebody and say, hey, it's okay to feel that way, but it's not going to kill you. It's not, you know, it's not that frightening. And then it happens a couple of times. They're like, oh yeah, you know what? It's not that frightening. They get empowerment. You know, you get empowered.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that is, yeah, that's what coaching and therapy is all about, right?
I like to take that a step further though, because it's not just, it's okay to be with that, but it's also to look at what's valuable here. Like what 10% of this is something that you need to know right now.
Right.
And can
learn, like, what can I get out of this? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like even Corona, right? I mean, there's silver linings all over the place with this stuff. It's sad that 200 some odd thousand people died, but we've connected all over the world now. We have relationships and friends. I have a thing this afternoon with friends in London. I'm talking to people in Australia and Singapore and Vancouver and all over the United States. But I never met them. I have a whole group of attorneys down in Florida that I have weekly meetings with. Never had that before. So, you know, but you got to find them, I guess, right?
Yeah. I said in 2020, I wanted to travel.
Zooming around the world.
Well, so I'm traveling all over Zoom, right? And
yeah.
The people I've met in my coaching classes that I wouldn't have met if I was taking them in New York in person.
Right.
It's been incredible. The podcast, it's just been absolutely incredible.
The world is connected. I've had people on my podcast from all over. Actually, my London group. So interestingly enough, one of the people from London went to Malta for a little while. I don't know if you know, Malta is like this little island in the Mediterranean off of like Greece or Italy or something like that. It's a separate country, tiny little country. So she's there for whatever reason, teaching, whatever. And she took us on a Zoom tour of Malta. Like we're all in the meeting. I couldn't be in the group and now I got to watch the video. But you know what I mean? You couldn't have done that before. Could you imagine if this pandemic happened like 25 years ago or we had dial phones and the kids couldn't do remote learning?
Yeah.
You know, craziness. But I guess timing is, you know, things happen for a reason.
They do. And when I think about my timing, you know, everyone's like, ooh, how's it been starting a business right before a pandemic? I'm like, I'm not a gym owner and I'm not a teacher right now. And those are two really hard places to be if you live in Jersey City. For anyone listening that's not in Jersey City, like our gyms just opened like six weeks ago.
Them and restaurants were the most challenged. Yeah.
Yeah. And being a teacher. And so when I was teaching, like I wanted to be in administration because I do believe like leaders, that one person absolutely makes or breaks a school. I know this from administration. And I don't know that our principals and our superintendents, the ones that are really pulling the strings, quite fully grasp the challenge they have as leaders.
Totally not ready for this. Totally
definitely not
ready for this. Yeah.
And you know, what's hard about that for them is if you are you get to the point where you're a superintendent, my great grandfather was superintendent. You're so far removed from this like creativity and this like what,
right.
Even if you're teaching, in the college, you're still really far removed from what it actually means to pivot on a dime, which is what teachers actually do. Like I saw a teacher the other day who posted like, oh great. They want us to have more self-care. So we're going to a Zoom meeting to learn about self-care. Like, come on.
Right. That's the way it is. My daughter had to attend, I guess it's a drug thing. You know, the high school kids have to go to it. She's a freshman, whatever. My daughter and even my senior, they do it every year. It's probably a state requirement or something. So it was a mandatory assembly. You can't go to school. So it was on Zoom. She's sitting in her bedroom. I mean, the world has changed and teachers weren't really ready for it because we, you know, we teach a certain way and we educate the teachers to teach a certain way in the classroom, in person, which is a great thing. We just weren't ready for this to happen in 3 months instead of 15 years. I mean, just wasn't, you know, it's difficult.
Yeah. And I don't, this is probably why I didn't take the route, because superintendents have their own people they have to answer to, and the governors and everyone that's making
it's
the
administration.
Decision,
it's not,
which is teaching. Exactly why I left, because I realized as a leader, I would never be able to impact change. I would just become the man that is telling you what the state says or what the right. federal government says.
As they sad, but it's frustrating and probably just the reality.
Yeah. But if I was a superintendent in charge of my budget, like I would look at professional development. Like, what were we going to spend on this? Can we get some teachers a massage? Can right. we get them extra subs? Like maybe the teachers need to call off sick more days. Like what I just, my hearts go out for teachers right now as they're trying to still love what they do. And I can't help but think of all the teachers that don't love what they do and just how much more difficult that is. And it's I know hard. There's a lot of them out there.
And their
there.
Kids are with them. So they're teaching. My kids are going through this. So they're teaching and they got little kids. The kids are pulling at their pants. They're trying to teach science in high school. And the kids going, mommy, 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 I don't know, this isn't working. And okay, can you guys hold on a second? And this goes back and forth. And it's hard for the kids to learn and hard for the teachers. It's frustrating. I feel for them. I mean, it's not, look, as a parent, I'm not thrilled with what's been happening in terms of the quality of what my kids are learning. My wife's a math tutor. She's busy as she's ever been, because all the parents are like, oh my God, they're not learning anything. So, you know, and maybe they are, but the parents are just worried. So she's making a fortune and she's working her ass off tutoring every kid that she can. But it's difficult when your kid isn't learning. And a lot of it's not, you know, and just not the teacher's fault. It's, you know what happened today? We got up because of the storm. I don't know how big the storm was in Hoboken, but it rained here. The mm-hmm. internet went down to our school system. Now, I don't know who, what idiot has one line coming in somewhere that connects the entire district, but the internet's down. So the teachers can't get into the system to get their materials for the day. School closed. No school today in Westfield, New Jersey, because some idiot pulled a plug or there's one connection to the internet. I can't. Isn't that the whole point of the internet, that it can't go down because there's multiple whatever. So that's what we woke up to this morning. And I think, but we could have a whole nother episode about public education and frustrations. I had a guy on my podcast, Jeff Gargis. He's got a company called Teach Better, and they go into districts and teach the teachers how to teach the students better, more like, you know, not necessarily grade wise, but more at the speed in which the kids learn. I don't understand the whole thing, but he came on and, you know, we talked about, but yeah. I want to get back to something you said before. And that is, you talk about right brain versus left brain. I think that entrepreneurs are very right brained, you know, and that's one of the problems with being an accidental entrepreneur. So one of two things happen: either you're right brain and you don't want to pay attention to any of the stuff that, like, you know, like knowing your numbers and the financials and stuff. That's not right brained. That is left brain, and that is not fun. And it's, and if you don't know your numbers, you really get crushed. And then there's other people that are really left brain. They're not creative. And then they come into this whole entrepreneurial world, and that's a problem, because now you don't have any of the creativity. You may know your numbers, but there may not be many numbers. So I think it's very difficult to find the balance, you know, to be able to say, okay, maybe at some point you can hire somebody to do it, but you get all this creative stuff. Like you said, you got the gym and you're in the park and you're doing all this stuff. And then if you don't pay attention to your numbers and all the planning, which you did, you're not as right brain as you think. Nobody else does it. And then they fail. That's the problem.
Yeah. So you nailed it when you said the word you hire. And so yes, is
that learn what you can't do or you're not good at doing. Yeah. But isn't that your ultimate goal at the beginning, right? It's to figure a way to do the things that you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah. I think you have to spend some money to make money. And so you have to realize you're going to have a CPA your first year of your business, period. Right. Because they're going to tell you to get QuickBooks, and maybe you hire someone that's certified in QuickBooks. Now I can right. figure out QuickBooks.
No, but a bookkeeper, somebody who puts it all in categories.
You can hire a bookkeeper.
You shouldn't be doing that yourself. Yeah,
absolutely. And so when we talk about left and right brain, what we now know with MRI and the imaging that we can see is that people aren't just left and right, right? We have all of it.
Of course.
And it's not that.
You'd be brain damaged if half of your brain right. didn't work.
And they both fire all the time. What we do know, there's this road in between them, and I don't remember the technical term.
No, but I know it's the little ridge in the middle.
Yep. And you can thicken that. And the thicker that is, the quicker you can go back and forth between your left
thickening is better.
Yes. You want to have that. You want to have a really good road that you can travel back and forth from very quickly, because you actually, your nervous systems that you use are two separate systems. And so when you can to shut them off and hop back and forth is the idea. And that's right. really where I want to work on.
That. Yeah.
Yes. And meditation is how you can do that. And you're going to build your neural path. You're thickening your prefrontal cortex. You're strengthening that as well. And then writing the poetry, if you need to develop your right brain or more, is a way that you can work on it. But I think for me, I never thought of myself as this like numbers person, this like math person.
No, you're creative type.
I understood that things had to be profitable. I understood that the whole reason I wanted the gym, in addition to I was losing my passion for teaching, was my ex-husband had a kidney transplant and kidney failure. And I was like, we're not have kids yet. Like, I was literally thinking so far the future of what am I going to do to support a family if he gets sick again?
Yeah,
kidney
sure.
only lasts 30 years.
Right.
I was making 30, less than I was making my first year teaching in Chicago. I was making 30 grand at this private wow. school.
Yeah.
And so part of that for me was, well, this is how I'm going to afford to live. And
not if you don't know your numbers though. You may have nothing left.
So that night. Tiny little Excel thing I found, right? Like right. My right brain did some Google searches. Like, I was creative enough to say, when as a teacher, I would tell a kid when they asked me a question, JGI, like just Google it. Like,
yeah, not there you go. I like that. JGI, just Google
just
it.
Google
I just
it.
Learned a texting like acronym. So when my kids ask me something, I just JGI.
I think that's a nerdy teacher thing. It's right, not a right thing down. That kids say.
It's
so they probably won't
thing.
Know it.
LMOA. LMAO.
Yeah. L-O-A. But that Excel calculator showed me, I just had to put in my numbers and it showed me how much money that I had, or how many members I had to have and how much money I had to charge to do that.
Right. So, and you're basically a subscription model. So you know how many people we got to add and this is what's going to add.
Right.
But you also recognize that, okay, we have a shortfall. Like, we don't have enough people right now. We don't have, so what do we do to fill that? And your creative side said, oh, we could put people's signs on the equipment. We could do, I mean, how many gyms do that? They don't.
So, no.
Yeah, of course not. Because it's a good idea. That's why they wouldn't do it. So you got to be creative. I mean, creativity, I think, is a much stronger, a much better attribute. Like, if you got to be deficient in one area, do it on the left side, because you go hire a bookkeeper. I know somebody does bookkeeping for small businesses, $150 a month until your revenue gets higher. She doesn't charge you more, yeah. You know? And so you go hire somebody to do that. The creativity stuff is very hard to hire people, because you have to interact with them. You have a certain vision of how you want to do your business. You go work with a digital marketing company. You got to be involved. They're not just going to send stuff out to the world. You're not going to pay attention to it. It's your message. But yeah. The left brain stuff, you can definitely farm out, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because for people that are in a really left brain world, like, that's where my advising and coaching is really helpful. They're probably the last people that would think, oh, I should hire someone that's creative. But
right.
The coach part of me is going to hold your mission, your values, your vision. And the creative side of me is going to offer you all these perspectives that you haven't ever thought about, because you're living in your left brain. So financial places are some of my favorite, the financial advisors.
To find those people and work with them?
Yeah. Well, so they're my favorite to talk to. I don't know if they want to work with me. That's the funny part.
Okay.
Because they're not, when they test to become a financial advisor, they're not looking for innovators. They're looking for executors, right? But here's the problem, is that then they get people that they on at paper say maybe they should be really good. They have this really strong why, because that's what they always coach to in that area, is what's your why? Focus on your why. But the system that they're supposed to execute, like, how it's just not working for them for some reason.
Right.
And that's where having someone that can help coach you in a more innovative way to figure out, well, how can you make this system work for you?
Right.
So it's an interesting industry, because they don't have any, they don't reward that right brain.
Well, as a matter of fact, the compliance obstacles make it very difficult to be creative. You can't,
yep.
you got to, you know, they're looking up your ass every time. They have things that monitor your posts and LinkedIn and a keyword. They go, wait, you liked Katie's that you can't do that. And I'm like, what do you mean? She just said she was at the park having a sandwich. I liked her picture. So there's these systems that prevent you from being or stand in the way from you being too creative. You know, the people that are real successful in those businesses just do whatever they do all the time. They're constantly talking to people, this, boom, 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 boom. And they're not creative about it. And that's so it, to a certain extent, it's hard to be a very creative person in the financial business because of the heavy compliance issues.
And so if you think about your entire life, then you're building these patterns in your brain that, and your brain is a reward.
What happened with that?
I don't know.
I'm on a hard connection. I don't think I lost anything on my end. I just stayed on. I just kept recording. I'm just like doing things, hanging out. Did you get my email?
I did not.
I sent you an invite.
I was just waiting for my internet. I don't know.
It must be on your end then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you were in the middle of a sentence and then you were like, and that, and I'm like, Katie, do you remember what we were saying?
I'll do some editing
to this episode.
Yeah. Sorry about that. We were talking about the financial advisor's brains and how they're not rewarded for being creative.
Yeah.
So it impacts your life outside of your work because that creative brain needs to, you know, if you're in a relationship, that person's going to want you to tap in and stop using your logic all the time and stop seeing things quite so black and white and maybe get a little bit more gray. And your kids are definitely going to need that creative side and that playful side. And that's the scary part about habits at work is that you will constantly, if that's the only side that's being rewarded and being used, is that you start to lose it.
Right. That makes sense. Sure. Absolutely.
And what we know though now is that you can regenerate brain cells. So we used to think that you were born with all the ones you get.
Well, that's hopeful then for me.
Yes. Neuroscience is like, nope, you can actually, your hippocampus and stimulated exercise will do that. You will regenerate brain cells. And your neuroplasticity, you can create those neural pathways and you can build that, but you have to work on it. And so where I like to help people in that industry for coaching is like, I understand that you may not be performing at work, but I bet if we looked at some other areas of your life where we could tap into some of that creative side where you would see where you could reward yourself at work as well.
Right, right. Yeah. No, I worked in the financial industry for a long time. My dad's in the insurance business and I work with a lot of financial advisors and yeah, I mean, it's difficult. And I always wanted to be more creative and you can't, you just get in trouble at work. You know, every time I see somebody do something creative, it's, they don't get permission or this and that, and the next thing you know, they're getting in trouble.
Yeah.
They're getting censured. They're getting fined. They're getting suspended. He's like, what did I do?
Yeah. And so what was interesting for me to think about that is when the CEO of Wells Fargo comes out and says that, you know, there's a lack of black talent. You know, I have curious questions as a coach. I'm not going to judge you. I've got some curious questions though. And one of them is looking at, well, is that because they're more creative? They're creative. Like you don't have your, what you require from their talent pool is not necessarily what we have. Is that the same is true for women? I think about women in finance as well and how we're often underrepresented.
Right. But do you think that's because he's right? I don't think he's right.
There's absolutely not.
Right?
No.
There's not a lack of black talent or female talent. No way.
No, not at all. And so I think about, you know, left brain, right brain. Like I could be that talented left brainer. Clearly my business was successful. So, but I can't, I'm not going to be beaten into compliance in the same way
and
that
it's
you
not
might
fit with
get
the way
people.
You work.
It's not, right. It's that environment. So when we talk about company culture, what I see is, well, you don't have a company culture that attracts black talent. You don't have a company culture that attracts women, talented women. So no, there isn't a lack of the talent, but there is a problem with the, with your company culture. If you want to attract that talent.
Right. Yeah. You're not branding yourself or creating the environment to for those people to say, hey, I want to join that organization. People are like, forget it.
Yeah. I mean, I also think about how hard it would be for someone that's black to be successful in finance, the way that people well, treat them. Like, how is it? Can you, do people want to do business with you?
Yeah. They don't give you a chance.
I've talked to people that, that are friends, like that were in that industry. It's like, it's hard. Like I didn't have my, my picture on my LinkedIn page because that would deter some people from wanting to work with me. So there's a bigger issue.
Yeah.
But you have this very left brain person who says, well, here's the numbers, guys. There's just not a lack. There's a lack of talent.
Right.
Well, that's why you need someone like me to help you understand that. No, there's plenty of talented people out there. You just don't know how to create a culture where they will be successful.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about your video podcast, because I know you said that you were doing kind of a series, like you did Women in Leadership for a while, and then you started another series, didn't you?
So I have the Outstanding Women Leaders, and then right. I also have a Laugh, Learn, and Empower, and it's a paid content series for women. And it's, I go through a lot of the coaching stuff. I educate a lot on the neuroscience of the brain. I pick different topics that you may want to work on. So for example, anxiety is one of those topics. So talking about, here's a way to, listen to this the next time that you're having this panic attack, and just, and walking you through a meditation and a visualization.
So that's not an interview style content. Nope. That's,
it's a solo cast. Is that what they call it?
I have no idea. That's a great term. I have no idea.
I think that's what the kids are calling him.
Okay. A solo cast. Yeah. I don't want to do a solo cast, because your Outstanding Women in Leadership is you're interviewing women.
Yes.
Outstanding leaders. Are you still doing that?
I am. And I have the Bring Your Own Brain that you were on as well. Right. And that's because there's, men have a lot to offer, and I didn't want to fully exclude you. So,
so is that what Bring Your Own Brain is? You just talk to men?
No. So my next one actually coming up is with a man and a woman, and it's on mental health. Okay. So she battled depression and bipolar for 54 years. She signed up for a neuro coaching program and has been medication free and living a peaceful mind for the last 5 years. And then the other one is Dale, and he is a schizophrenic. He was diagnosed hospitalized. He went to college after he got out. How he was talked to. So he's been in the system for a long time, and now he coaches families of schizophrenics. They're the forgotten victims, where they don't understand. It's hard for them to navigate. And so he wants to help coach them.
Wow.
And yeah, he talks a lot about feeling like, you know, they told him his brain was broken like a bone when he first went into the hospital. And great, bones can heal. And that has sort of been, I think, the mindset that he's had is, okay, like, then I will heal.
Right, I'll get better.
But so I'm really, really excited for that, Bring Your Own Brain. But yeah, it's just an opportunity it can be men and women on the podcast, just to share a discussion on something in leadership or relationships. Mental health is definitely a relationship with yourself that people don't talk about enough.
Right. So how can people find you? That's all on YouTube?
Yeah. So you can find me, Outstanding Women Leaders. It's on YouTube. It's on Podbean. You can also find it at owlprofessionalcoaching.com/podcast.
Okay. We'll put links in the show notes. And I appreciate coming on with me.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.